You know, it just wouldn't be a Friday without a Tacky Talk. So State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is with us again to chat about what's happening and what's not at the state. Hi, Tacky.
Hey, Joe. Happy Monday, happy Saturday, happy Friday. I can't tell you what day it is anymore.
They all run together again. But here we are, the end of September, approaching October next week, actually. And kids are somewhat back to school. Matter of fact, as you're aware, the governor used the Quincy Public Schools reopening model as a kind of a model for the state just yesterday, highlighting that. So that's, a feather in the cap for the city.
Absolutely. We know that the administration, as well as the school teachers, have been working hard to try to ensure a safe environment for them and our kids. And the parents have definitely expressed different opinions about, as well, about how to go back into school. And Quincy's hybrid model will be interesting to see as it unfolds. And, you know, it's good to get recognized that we are doing the best we can on trying to satisfy the needs of everybody involved. And, of course, the state provided about $4 million of COVID money that the federal government dispersed to us specifically for school reopenings and try to help transition to a hybrid model, online model, or a in-person model, which I don't think any city is doing completely all in person. But, you know, everyone's doing at least some kind of online and or hybrid model. The fear I think everyone has, all of us have, is that it is a really bad second wave. You know, we're going to jump back online instantly. So again, I remind folks, while people seem to be relaxing a little bit too much, it feels like, you know, with the state of emergency still in effect, governor's order on masks and social distancing and gatherings are in effect. And, you know, again, I remind folks, you got to take some personal responsibility. The parents who sent the kid of COVID positive in Attleboro, totally irresponsible. And, you know, we rely on our children and our teenagers and young adults to try to behave better. But I think it's very important for families to really have this conversation about the fact that we're impacting their lives, the impact of our economy, and your classmates, and potentially their parents and grandparents too.
Is anything happening on Beacon Hill at all, Tacky?
Not much. I mean, we haven't got the schedule yet for the legislative session. We have several conference committees on economic development, global warming, healthcare, and others still pending in conference committee. So
police reform bill, right?
Police reform bill sitting in conference committee. I know the press talked a lot about that bill, but we got like a bunch of other stuff in conference committee we voted on at the end of July. So it's a waiting game. We're waiting for the six conferees to come to an agreement. And until that happens, I can't tell you what's in the bill, what's not in the bill that may come out of conference. And conference committee is a closed door conversation, not to the public, including the senators and representatives. So, you know, I'm a blabbermouth. People kind of know that about me, but I try to be honest and tell you what I know, but I have nothing for you here. In the meantime, I'm still running public hearings, Facebook Live, as well as to put the recordings on the state's legislative website. We've been doing Zoom hearings, and our staffs, you know, House and Senate staffs are now talking a bit more because as much as we love Zoom, there is stability issues we discovered over the last couple of weeks. As school has come online, Zoom's reliability is becoming more troublesome.
Oh yeah, more people are using much more bandwidth than there were before, so that's definitely noticeable. Anything going on with the state budget? What's the status of that right now?
October 7th, there'll be a public hearing, again, more of an informational hearing, I put it, similar to what they did in April with the experts in the economy, as well as, you know, banks and financial industry folks, to come and talk to the Committee on Ways and Means, both the House and Senate together, about their latest forecasts. We're still working under the doom and gloom, worst case, horror scenario. But, you know, tax returns were slightly better in the month of August compared to last year. But again, it reflects the fact that we delayed tax returns to July. And other people have applied for deferment of tax payment to October 15th. So, I mean, we still haven't got, I won't say a big portion, but a portion of our revenue hasn't come in yet, as well as corporate taxes. So, you know, a lot of this is from 2019, and given the challenges of 2020, we should not say that 2019 is a predictor for 2020 in any way, shape, or form. So fiscal year 20 versus fiscal year 21, I would, you know, jump to presumptions where people, oh, look, it was a great August collection. don't use that as the benchmark. So October 7th, you'll be on the legislator's website on the public hearing section. If people want to tune in and see what the experts on the economy say to us.
Okay. How's the unemployment fund holding out, if you will?
I haven't looked recently, but unemployment rate's gone down to over 11%. I think it's 11.6 as of the end of August was the last number. That reflects the phase three reopening the governor put out. So people are now getting back to work. The end of PPP, the end of unemployment benefit expansion assistance of 600 has been reduced to 300 under the Trump administration, which I talked about last time, uses FEMA money. So as a coastal community, and given all the hurricanes we've seen and the forest fires, he's spending federal emergency management money, which is supposed to be for those issues. But I put again my consternation about that. You know, it is a smaller amount, and it's only good for about 6 or so weeks before that amount he set aside expires. There's just not enough money there. Well, Congress doing some more, this could be troubling. And this impacts people's spending ability. So people have been making rent. People that had, they were stock up on supplies, were able to still do some optional purchases, may not have the affordability to do so. So either they have to try to figure out how to get back to work. In this very challenging situation, as employers are also trying to keep themselves, employees and customers safe, which is a higher cost. Everybody's spending more money to stay open. We're trying not to raise prices on people too much because it costs more to stay open. You know, I'm hoping constituent calls do not result in a whole bunch of eviction and housing assistance requests. I'm hoping I don't get a whole lot of calls on food stamp requests. I'm hoping I don't get a whole lot of calls on need for how to deal with workforce transitional stuff. So a lot of my indicators are what constituent calls are coming in on about needs for help, and it gives me an indicator at home how things are going. Thankfully, construction is still strong. I think everybody's seen every construction-related vehicle, whether it be home or big building, moving at a rapid pace, trying to get everything done before the winter hits. Don't be surprised people are trying to work right into November, and I'm sure the asphalt plants are going to try to stay open as long as possible before the frost sets. So there's going to be a mad dash for busy seasonal workers to do as much as they can.
Yeah. I know there's been discussion recently about creating a restaurant bailout fund. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I talked with the restaurant industry. At the federal level, they're looking at about $120 billion of straight-up handouts.
Wow.
This is not a grant. This is not a loan. This is just straight-up money. Taxpayers will just literally bail out the restaurant industry as much as they can to keep them around. The state has a much smaller amount of money. We don't have the capacity as the feds to print dough. We still have a balanced budget. And the move would be, in our case, you know, try to find a little bit of COVID money plus whatever bond money we think is reasonable for the governor to authorize. We're very much resisting a bonding to balance our budget. I'm not saying we won't do it, but the last time we did this was back in the recession in the 90s, post-saving and loan scandal. And, you know, that hurt our credit rating immensely. And every dollar we bond to pay for operations is the bond dollar plus interest. It's not a one-on-one.
Right.
So in the long term, it doesn't really help us out unless we're in a severe emergency. The benefit is interest rates are lower. It wasn't like during the early 90s when interest rates were between 6 and 8%. I mean, interest rates are barely cracking a percentage point. So that could work to our benefit. But we would like not to, absolutely not to do that unless absolutely positively necessary.
Yeah.
But we can bond a little bit of money here and there for things like restaurant recovery. But still, that is a treacherous way to go.
Yeah, have those earlier bonds been repaid?
Those bonds went on like 20 plus years, so they should have been repaid by the time I got back in the office.
Okay.
You know, get back into the state house, Mike, not back in office, but back to the state house my second time around. So I came into work for Mike Morrissey's office in 1995. I was interning for Bilotti. So I came into the place during the end of a recession while taking on enormous debt payments. So it crinkled our ability to do capital projects because so much of it went to pay off the debt and making operational costs from that last recession.
I know here in Quincy, there's discussion about starting to regulate and tax short-term rentals, Airbnbs, you know, or other agencies like that in the city. I guess there's a state law that allows that to happen. Is that right?
Yeah, we're treating short-term rentals very much like the motels and hotels regarding the tax structure. It's not the identical tax structure. It's based on size of the business, and there's three different tiers versus like a single homeowner versus a commercial short-term business complex. So we have a tiered system. And like the meals tax, where the city gets, adds 0.75%. That's the city adding that 0.75% to meals tax. The city has the option of adding some amount, which I can't remember right at this moment, on short-term rentals. Like they get a portion of the motel hotel taxes.
I see. Okay. Is that making its way through the city council now? Obviously, they're looking for ways to generate new revenue, anticipating some potential problems down the road, pandemic induced.
Well, they're hoping that there'll be some movement, even if it's at least domestic travel, on some tourism and seasonal show-ups. And I suspect they're hoping that the short-term rentals will be an alternative choice to hotels for some folks at a lower cost. Airbnb and similar industries like them are having a massive problem on things like refunds because they only a transitional, they're the transitional agency. They're not the end user agency because it's between you and the home on rentals. So, you know, it's a bit of a mess. And no surprise, just like the hotel industry, short-term rentals are very much down, and Airbnb is, and other industries like them are desperately trying to figure out how to keep both their providers happy and their customers happy. And I want to send a little bit of warning about that as well. I mean, there's been scam on vacation homes this summer. I suspect to be some scams going into wintertime as well. Never pay up front. Never give people cash. Never give people money. What do you call it? Those money, you know, the things that are checks that are really money. Can't
think of it. Money orders.
Money orders. Never give them money orders. You know, always use a credit card because you got fraud protection.
Yeah.
And if you're not sure, obviously, you know, if you look online, if there's almost no information about it, you probably should take a pass. So, you know, again, warn people that there's unscrupulous folks taking advantage of the COVID situation for any number of scams.
Yeah, speaking of scams, and speaking with the Quincy police, there have been at least 20 of the different unemployment scams right here in Quincy. People, you know, claiming they're somebody else to collect unemployment benefits. Are you hearing that as well?
Oh, yeah. I've had people, I've had more than one person give us a call and help to resolve that. A DOA, as well as the AG and other law enforcement agencies have been investigating these claims. It is all organized, internet-driven. The PUA on the gig workers, the pandemic unemployment insurance for gig workers, is a particularly tasty target because we never provided unemployment to them before. That is a new thing for the federal government.
Right.
These are people that are don't have conventional employers. The employer actually has to confirm your unemployment status as either laid off or furloughed. And I've heard some instances regarding retirees also. Hmm. So these are old, essentially old data breaches from the past, which some unscrupulous folks between that and combing your social media is where they get a lot of personal information to create fake identities and start direct deposits directly to their accounts. We actually did an informational session for the committee. It's actually on my Facebook somewhere deep in the back at this point, asking about this stuff, understanding that they can only disclose so much during a pending investigation. I do not expect the scam to stop. If you have been scammed, definitely you can call my office. We'll try to get it resolved with DOA. Definitely file a police report and definitely contact your three credit reporting agencies about credit freeze and credit monitoring.
Yep.
Your credit reports are free to you, the first one, as well as if you file a police report, you get additional free credit reports.
Okay.
You can get up to, if you file a police report, you can get up to 12 reports, which is a total of 4 each from the 3 credit reporting companies.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have a good sleep last night, so everything's foggy today. And you also can check the AG's website and FEC's website, website, my website. Data breach, data privacy is stuff that I spend a lot of time learning as part of the committee.
Would you be responsible if somebody, you know, collected benefits in your name for paying back?
No, that's why you need to get contacts as soon as possible so we can ensure it doesn't happen. and we have to get some identification, and that's been a very slow process for unemployment as they're trying to keep up with both still processing claims, verifying they still qualify, as well as dealing with extensions. People are looking for extensions on unemployment. You should look at getting extension if you feel like you're hitting that part of not able to get back to work.
Yeah.
And part of your life regarding the need. But you need to get some personal identification, such as driver's license, passports, bills paid, things like that, ready to scan to the DUA for identity verification. So everybody takes time to process all that. They're just overwhelmed.
Yeah. When we talk a bit about international affairs regarding the pandemic, Jackie, I know we've seen surges going on in Israel, London. Those obviously were hit before the United States, so folks are worried that another surge is coming here too. Are you seeing it in other parts of the world?
Canada has declared they're in a second surge. So that's where the indication is. They've actually been pretty good on containment, but there's definitely a second surge. China is doing hot spots surges, which information on China is always a little bit challenging, but in this instance, better knowledge about COVID-19 impact there is very important. So anytime it's a hot spot, they can really rapidly just lock a place down because they basically have martial law powers. So they tell you not to come out of the house. You don't come out. You'll be in jail if you do.
Right.
So exact numbers, we're not quite sure. They actually allowed more international travel in the country. They basically banned travel on entry. Many countries, as well as Massachusetts, still require 14-day quarantine on that. So it's prohibiting a lot of travel overseas. A place like Tokyo seems to be under some level of control. They're very cautious right now. As you know, the Olympics has been delayed 1 year in Tokyo. So they're working extremely hard, particularly going through the winter months. Their weather pattern in northern Japan, central Japan, is very much like Massachusetts. It's generally fairly cool, with dry air and a bit of snow going in, but the further north you go, it looks more like Massachusetts, like South Korea. So they're having the same concern about second wave and being indoors. Europe, Spain, and Italy, France are all looking to try to control what looks like could be a second surge coming. The British are still in a pretty severe situation, and they are thinking they're already in the second surge. India has now overtaken Brazil as the number two COVID-infected country. I suspect they may overtake us by the fact they have a massively bigger population of 1.4-ish plus billion people. So, and they have a very challenged infrastructure because of the size of the country and the volume of people they have. I don't think people understand the grasp of how big that country is. And when you have that many people to serve, it can put a lot of strain on the government as well as their healthcare and private sector. Places like the Philippines, enormously high unemployment rate still continues because of COVID. And they don't always have the best infrastructure like we do on unemployment benefits and whatnot. So as a result, there's more people sadly on the streets. And the lack of tourism in those tourist countries, particularly the Southeast Asian countries, enjoy strong tourism during the winter months as we're going into the winter months, as people head for warmer weather like us going to Florida, they're not going to see that huge wave. And a lot of people cannot get enough money from domestic travel. And Massachusetts is an example of that. So we do have a lot of people that travel here in the summer months, school vacation, July 4th, patriotic historical state. We didn't have that this year, so domestic travel is very thin. People coming back to school, they generally hang around for a few extra days as they get the kids unpacked, particularly if you're from out of country. International travel is basically almost not happening at a severe level, so we lose that tourism. Leaf peeping is coming around the corner fast. And Halloween, again, a domestic travel as well as international travel months. And in Europe, October is a vacation month for kids in several countries. So Boston being 6 to 8 hours away is not unattractive. So, while we're going to get some domestic travel, and I know MOT, Mass Office of Tourism, as well as the governor's office and local cultural councils and local tourism councils are trying to get more domestic travel to come in. I think people undervalue exactly how much international travel makes up our tourism and hospitality business. Yesterday, I had to take my mom to for a CT scan at Tufts Medical. So and I took a little stroll around. I've never ever seen Downtown Crossing and Faneuil Hall and Chinatown and the Washington Corridor have that little people any time of day. I found a metered parking space in Boston in the middle of the afternoon yesterday.
That alone tells you there's a change happening for sure. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm not used to finding metered parking. I think people know what I'm talking about. So, you know, again, it's a reflection of the fact that I think people at home don't always really appreciate the sheer volume of people from around the world, especially overseas, that visit us and spend their money and go away. And like the film industry, as I like to advocate for, it's the best kind of money because we didn't have to build any infrastructure for them. They show up, they have a great time, they spend the money, they go home.
Yeah.
You know, it's better than your family visiting, because your family visit, you have to clean up after them.
That's right. It's like grandparents coming. They just come, leave the money, spoil the kids, and then leave.
Pretty much the same principle.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I'm sure we're feeling it in Quincy too. The Adams National Park didn't open this year, so that I'm sure has an impact locally.
Absolutely. I mean, it impacts our local restaurants, our local businesses, our local hotels. It affects the Red Line. Ridership is down. You can find a parking space at the T lots. As we all now telecommuting, there's a lot of fear of lack of confidence of riding the train because of enclosed spaces. It's not like they're going to be standing next to you constantly spraying you Lysol. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not realistic, right? You can't have a person literally just standing all day and just spray everybody going into the train.
Right.
There's that confidence issue. And also, don't forget, you got the people that are essentially another type of gig worker, which are the artists, the musicians, the Uber drivers, your ride-sharing drivers, as you talk about, you know, Airbnb, the home sharing, room sharing industry. They've all been negatively impacted too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. What's your take on the whole push to get a vaccine, Tacky? I know we just heard there's a phase 3 trial going into effect very soon locally, and we're getting reassurances from all the people in the health industry that it's not being politically driven, but what do you think?
Well, duh, it's politically driven. I mean, the announcement came from the White House. It didn't come from the industry itself. It's a bad habit of government, in my mind, to make announcements that the private sector had no idea you're going to make, especially in a situation where life and death is involved. And I find that very troubling. Again, during this pandemic, we should listen to the doctors and the experts. Don't listen to me. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert. I only know what I learned from doctors and experts, which I relate to you. And as I said many times already, what I knew back in March, when I still could talk to Mark right. in my last interview in studio, is completely different from what I'm telling you now, because the information has indeed changed. Phase 3 vaccine trials involves large-scale testing. When I say large-scale, we're talking about 60,000-plus people from diverse backgrounds, medical histories, genders, lifestyle, socioeconomics, to try to get the broadest range possible of possible side effects. And if a side effect occurs, they got to find out very quickly. And secondly, is the dangerous part, is the placebo part, where they have to expose both parties to the virus to see what happens. This test can take anywhere of up to a year. This is where they're talking about the flu year component. And I know there's a vaccine trials in Great Britain, United States, China, Russia, which I'm not sure what's going on in Russia, because they've received released zero documents, as far as I don't know of so far, to the scientific community about what the phase 1 and 2 look like, which is very important, so people have some confidence in what's going on. And there's the supply chain issue, back to supply chains. I think I don't know whether people notice when they get their vaccinations. I had to take immunization therapy for my food allergy problems, so I'm now more acutely aware of this stuff. But has anyone ever noticed that your vials are located in refrigerators?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Well, picture trying to keep cool, 5 to 7 billion doses in little vials.
Yeah.
You know how many we don't have on planet? Like maybe you need 8 billion vials to start with. That's a lot of little glass vials. Plus, you can't reuse hypodermic needles.
Right.
We got a logistics issue. And depending on the vaccine, is it one dose or two or more?
So, yeah, you could be looking at double the number that you would need for just one. Wow, I hadn't thought of that. And not to mention just transporting them in refrigerated vehicles, right?
Refrigerated, properly refrigerated vehicles, because the refrigerated vehicle refrigerated patching fails, that could become toxic.
Right.
So they have to verify the safety of the product upon arrival, because it also expires. These are not things you can keep in cool environment for like a decade. They have to keep making it because the potency will eventually fail over time. So for example, AstraZeneca, I can't pronounce words, you know, has a vaccine trial that's two doses over the course of 21 or 25 days.
Okay.
It has to be split at negative 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Things I just learned yesterday watching Wendover Productions on YouTube.
Huh.
Medora, for example, has one that's much closer to refrigeration temperatures in like the 0 to 10 degree zone. So that's obviously more appetizing. But also, how many dosages can you give to people? I mean, you need to have medical personnel available. And if you go to – even if you're a city like Boston, for example, imagine trying to dose 660,000 or 700,000 people. Just the image of that.
Just the logistics of it, yeah.
Yeah, and then you have to do priority. So obviously, if you're in the older generation or immunocompromised category, you should obviously go first. That's why it's so important to have the safe, because you're injecting a vaccine, which is very likely going first to people who are immunocompromised in our senior population.
Yes, yeah.
And then you work down the chain of risk, because unfortunately, that's how it's going to have to work. And then you have the competition between wealthy nations and not wealthy nations.
Mm-hmm.
The wealthiest nations are able to produce this research and cooperating on a global level for certain countries that want to cooperate. And then on the flip side, though, if you're a middle of the road or a low per capita country with not a great infrastructure and distribution, who's going to do it? The United Nations is great on vaccination. We know they're eliminating polio around the world. They're attacking measles around the world. But even with that infrastructure, you know, imagine trying to carry crude items, you know, in a dirt road, in, you know, somewhere in Africa, for example. Let's say even a fairly modern South Africa is fairly modern, but it's still a lot of travel. And even in America, you got all these rural communities in Ohio, or even the Berkshires in our case.
Yep.
We got to transport these materials through Massachusetts in a chill facility on a time frame. Plus, you got to pay for the cost of transport. And you have to have the medical personnel already out there to do it. So community health centers and you know, people have to drive in, you know, 50 to 100 miles or 150 miles, depending where you are in the Berkshires, because nothing's right. A straight road out there. Everything's a winding road, you know, to try to get to what hospitals. And we have closed hospitals. Quincy's an example of that. North Adams is an example of that. Lawrence is going that direction. You know, and then we got to, you know, organize the private and public, and not-for-profit sectors on distribution and whatever in terms of dosages.
Yeah.
Right? We got to get those dosages out, those logistics on it. And if you need a negative, you know, 90-degree thing, that means the biotech industry is going to have to themselves store that materials. Which is your distribution center.
You've really inspired hope, Jackie.
I'm not the glass full guy. I'm the glass empty guy. I think people that talk to me know that I've been using explicitives throughout the entire process because of my general frustration of everything. Yeah. You can pick the explicitive you want. But I mean, this is part of the education process. I think everybody really needs to put a little bit of effort.
Yeah, things that don't get talked about, things that you don't think about, really. You just think some kind of magic happens and everybody gets their shot that they need and we're done.
Well, then you have politicians in Washington and other states making this a political issue because they want to score points to the constituency. Look, bottom line is this. I don't want people to die. If you want to vote me out of office for that, well, go for it. I mean, other folks are behaving like they got to pander to people about this stuff. You know, I do have a threshold. It's called death. You know, I don't want people on ventilators for weeks on end fighting for their lives. I don't want people having a loss of taste and diarrhea for 2 or 3 weeks from this thing. You know, obviously I don't want to see any loved ones die. So I mean, I'm kind of exhausted of watching the news and these politicians around the country decide that they're smarter than the medical community and the scientific community on what we call the novel coronavirus. It's novel because we don't know what it is. We don't know what the therapy should be. We don't know what the treatment should be. We don't know. We're still learning how it spreads. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to learn how that works. So that's why it's called novel. It's new. So all these folks taking like, oh, we treat this like the flu, the cold, all the stuff, SARS. I mean, no, it's genetically a different virus, which is still mutated.
Right.
It's going to mutate yet to a new strain of danger, but...
Yeah, just earlier this week, the director of the CDC said 95% of the American population is susceptible to COVID-19, and he anticipates another 200,000 deaths by the beginning of the new year. So those are his words, not mine.
Yeah. And there's been three confirmed reinfections, Korea, Hong Kong, and Denver. Mm-hmm. One about the one in Colorado is frightening, is that the person had mild, very mild symptoms the first time. I'm trying to remember the story. Very mild symptoms the first time, but he was symptomatic. He did get the disease, symptomatic, so he was suffering. Second time out, much more severe symptoms. Sufficient time passed that, you know, they figured antibodies would develop. So people thinking, oh, you know, I've been exposed to it. Maybe I won't have mild symptoms. I got antibodies immune. Well, hopefully that's the normal, and the people reinfected are the outliers, but we still don't know.
Right.
So a lot of people taking like little tidbits of stuff and assuming that that's fact.
Let's talk about the census. Let's totally shift gears because there's some good news there, right?
Well, the good news is pretty good, actually, and bad. I have not. I've been trying to keep up with so much different information, both on the committee level and the world and my own life. Census forms are due the 30th, so I think this video will be out probably this weekend or Monday, so yes. You're going to be almost out of time. So you still have time to self-report at 2020census.gov, 2020census.gov, so you have time to self-report, and we encourage people to do so. Nationally, self-reporting, people reporting on their own is 66.3%. Massachusetts, again, has done wonderful at 68.7%. Quincy is at 68.7% too, so we finally got to the state number. After being behind for so many months. Braintree's at 78.9, Weymouth at 74.4, Randolph at 70.3, Milton 82.2, and Holbrook at 74.7. So again, our neighbors do better than we do, but you know, we've exceeded 2010 self-reporting. Now, on the state number, the national number, the census indicates that they've reached 96.6 householders reporting, so those are households. And Massachusetts are on 76.6 reporting total. That includes the door knockers, the telephone people, trying to reach people in person, homeless shelters, senior housing, and so forth. We're 18th in the nation on reporting, totality-wise, which is pretty good. The county that's doing best in the state is Norfolk County. Norfolk County as a whole is 75%. That's very encouraging. Boston is number, I'm sorry, Braintree is number 5 in the state on reporting cities. Braintree is a town, but it's a city government.
Right.
Quincy is 29th, and there's 54 city formed governments in the state. So that's how they're using this form of government. So, you know, we're right in the middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that the door knockers, everyone got out there. I'm hoping that not just COVID, but the fear of the current environment of immigrants, non-English speakers, just not discourage people from filling the census form. I know there's been misinformation on social media outlets. We talked about the scam of census people calling you for money, which is scaring people off. But I'm, you know, hoping that we're able to reach the technology challenge, essentially. And people want to have paper because they don't trust the internet and get those forms back to us. Also, at the same time, remind folks, mail-in ballot applications are still being accepted. So if you're still uncomfortable about voting in November and you did not check off on your initial application to get a mail-in ballot for November, because in September you could have checked off that ballot, please, you know, visit my website, the secretary's website, the city clerk's website, to download the application and get that in.
Very good. Appreciate it, Tacky. Great to talk to you as always.
As always, great to talk to you, Joe. I think I'll be talking to you in the month of October next.
Yes, hard to believe, but it is here, sure. All right, we'll check in then.
Second, please be safe and be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.